myself out.
I am afraid of.
I'm terrified and paralyzed by.
I am deathly afraid of.
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello, and welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Perio. This week, my guest is podcaster, as well as real estate investor slash content creation expert, Scott Carson joins the show. Scott Carson is the face of WeCloseNotes.com, which helps people invest in real estate, as well as offering free workshops, seminars, online training, one-on-one information. You name it. If you're interested in investing, you should be connected with Scott Carson. He is the man to talk to. He has podcasts that address all kinds of real estate issues, as well as Note Night in America, which is a fun play on Football Night in America. He's also does one-on-one interviews and everything else. He was a great person. He's located in Austin, Texas, which is just a short drive, but we did it over Zoom. And in this episode, we talked about real estate, how he got into real estate investing and quit his day job. And then we get into his fear of letting his people down. It's a real fun interview. So let's get into this interview right now with Scott Carson. All right. My guest this week from WeCloseNotes.com and the clever Football Night in America, Note Night in America, Scott Carson from Austin, Texas. Scott, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, Ryan. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm just up 3 hours north of you on 35 here in Dallas. So
just a short drive, you know, up by 35.
Absolutely. And I guess you're kind of in a real estate hotbed now with Austin kind of booming the way it is.
You know, it's crazy here. I mean, I really don't invest much here in Austin for the most part. I invest outside of Texas mostly with what we do. But yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy market the last few years, although we are seeing a little bit of a correction, things slowing down in the market. You know, it's interesting when you have realtors calling you as an investor and say, hey, can you help me? All the activity has come to a screeching halt in the last 30 days.
Wow. So how did you get involved in like real estate?
Good question. So when I first got started, I bought my first house back in 2001. We got married, bought our first house, and I'd always been around, had an entrepreneurial bug. My, you know, parents owned the local hardware store down in Ingleside, Texas, down by Corpus Christi, where I grew up. And our realtor was like, hey, you guys, you know, you got great credit. You should buy investment property. It's like, yeah, sure. I can fix anything. Why not? So we bought two investment properties here in Central Texas. And then in the next 30 days we put renters in it, but then 30 days after that, I got laid off, and then my two tenants got laid off. So I got really firsthand experience of being in the distress space pretty fast there. So we were lucky to get rid of the two investment properties, you know, licked my wounds for about 2 years, and then I got back into buying real estate, investing, and doing things the right way, and not just paying retail for the most part. So I've been active since really, I guess you could say full-time, since really 2004.
Wow. So you're almost coming up on your 20-year anniversary of actually being in the real estate space as a full-time.
Yeah, it's time flies. We've seen a few ups and a few downs with the market. In 2008, we got away from doing kind of your traditional rentals and some other stuff and just started focusing on the distressed note space. So I've been buying distressed notes for over 15 years now, buying mortgages and then trying to, you know, we buy that stuff direct from banks. Mm-hmm. Not to own the property, but our goal is the cash flow from the mortgage stream. So we always try to, when we buy a distressed mortgage, we're usually buying it at a big discount. And then we make our money on that by then reaching back out to the borrowers and trying to work out a loan modification or payment plan and try to keep them in the houses. And then if they don't want to play ball with us, then we go the route to foreclosing and selling the property off. But we always like to try to keep people in their houses the best we can. And I buy in about 30 different states across the country. Also not usually one of those markets because it's just too overpriced here.
Yeah, it's like been crazy. Like it's like even just the whole state of Texas. It's like for the last year, everything is just like skyrocketed as far as value and price. And it's like, wow.
You know, it's one of the favorite places for people to invest in because we do have very friendly tenant laws. It's also really good to lend in because we have the fastest foreclosure laws in the country. The fact that we have no state property and no state income tax is a good thing. That's why we get a lot of folks coming in from the West Coast here into Texas. You know, it's turned into California East for the most part in a lot of places. But you know, it's a great state to live in. I mean, best state pride in the country out there, I think, there. And Texas will always be home.
Absolutely, for me too. I grew up in Houston, then moved to Dallas like in high school. So I've kind of lived kind of in both, I guess, of the largest cities here. And it just seems like Dallas is just the least fun, but it's actually a nice place to live. Like, it's like housing and everything else. Like, people come through here and they're like Texas and they're like, geez, you can build out anything here. It's like, there's no like restrictions on a lot of things that you have in, I guess, other states. Like, I didn't realize, I went to Maryland and they won't let you build on certain land because it's considered like landscape or beauty.
Yeah, there's all sorts of weird restrictions in other places. I mean, the great thing, Dallas is it's really, since the largest, you know, Dallas Fort Worth is really just a huge megaplex and it's growing rapidly. And there's a lot of outskirts there, so it's a great place to find something. I like Dallas better than I like Houston. I mean, I grew up in Corpus Christi, which, you know, if you live in Houston and Corpus along the Gulf Coast, it's like the armpit of Texas. You're during the summer, it's not just the heat; you have the freaking humidity that kills you. I mean, Houston's got some great sports teams. We've been lucky there for stuff like there, but you know, all it's got to do is think about raining in Houston and it floods. You know what I mean?
I remember that growing up, like just being in the Sugar Land area, that I would like floods would constantly, and we would just go out and play in the flood and stuff like that. And it's, you know, we probably wasn't the most healthy thing to do probably as kids, but it's what you do in South Texas. It's like you had just a trashy water park for like 3 days.
Who needed Schlitterbahn, right?
Yeah.
The hottest, coolest time in Texas is my front yard after monsoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Flip and slide, baby.
So I'm just completely blown away by how much, like, I guess, like actual, like, support you offer and stuff. Like, you offer virtual classes, you seminars, like you have at least weekly, if not bi-weekly, like your Notes Night in America and stuff like that, where you're offering like intensive, like it's not like a 5 minute blurb, it's an hour like live stream. How did you get into kind of, I guess, the support and media per like section of real estate? Like, how did you?
That's a really good question. And it goes back to, I was actually working in 2004. I was working for a guy by the name of Bob Leonetti and his business partner, Jamie Kayla. And he and she really helped, have really set the stage. And they taught classes. They worked with investors from across the country. So I was really, for like 4 years, I was operating a mortgage company with them, but I was learning real estate investing. And they would go to all these summits and conferences. And then they had their own coaching students, and they would do a, every Monday night, they would do just a teleconference, you know? So they have 50 to 100 people on a conference call. Well, I started doing that for them and started tuning into that, started learning real estate. So, like I said, I've been doing something on Monday night for over 20 years for the most part, you know, coming up on, almost 20 years. I think about 17 years now. But when I went up my own in 2008, we just kept doing that. No Night in America. Yes, we kind of stole that from Sunday Night Football or Football Night or Hockey Night or Baseball Night. Yeah. Like, why not? Can it be Note Night? You know what I mean? But we started doing this Monday Night webinar back in 2011 is when my go-to webinar was originally, when we were starting to use, I look back at that. And we've been doing it almost every Monday night. We'll skip it if there's a holiday or skip it if I'm traveling in most cases. But we're usually cranking out 35 to 40 of those episodes every year. And we've always approached it. I was very lucky when I was working with him. I met a guy by the name of Roland Frazier, who is a marketing genius. He's one of the minds behind Digital Marketer and the Traffic and Conversion Summit. He does a lot in this. And so he's been a mentor of mine. I worked with him. He taught me marketing and how to have that. You really need to have a marketing mindset first, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
And we've always approached this. Okay, how can we do this? So we've been doing webinars. We went to virtual classes 5 years ago before anybody else was really doing that stuff. It just became so much easier. I think we broke the internet a couple times because we were using different things that we just overloaded. You know, Google Live and other things. We'd have 1,500 people on it and just shut down. So we really been doing this before COVID, before it got popular. And then 5 years ago, 5 years ago and a week is when we launched our first, our podcast, the Note Closer Show, as a podcast. Prior to launching as a podcast, we did 150 days of Facebook Lives.
Yeah.
So over 5 months to just kind of build an audience and see if there was any traction to it. And by doing it on a daily basis, and it's okay, let's do it. We build an audience on Facebook and YouTube and stuff like this. Okay, let's go ahead and turn it into a podcast. And it's just what we do. And we see our marketing every day I wake up, it's always, okay, what can I do to market my business? Because mm-hmm. what can I do to get the word out what I'm doing? Because most people wait till the end of the day to market when they got time, and they're, you know, life gets in the way, life slaps us across the face, yeah. and we just get tired. I always approach it from the other way, so that stuff is out working for me on a consistent basis. So just a different mindset and mentoring along the way, you know, and it's worked for us. We have the number one YouTube channel, the number one podcast, and really the number one website for our niche of real estate investing, man. And I think building a niche is also just as equally important versus trying to be everything to everyone. You just water everything down. So we dominate our niche more than anybody else does.
Like the Seth Godin book, Tribes, you find your tribe. You don't just, why would you rather have 100,000 people that are dedicated to you or 10 million that could care less?
That's so true. It's my favorite book. I mentioned, I've got like a copy sitting right here. I always talk about tribes. It's just an important thing.
Absolutely. And I congratulations on being, you know, the basically, you know, I would say the founding father and slash, you know, big dog of your niche. And that's, you know, kind of also part of being a niche is to try to be the first in there so that you have the most expertise and you have, you know, the cachet, I would say, to be the top, and then have other people, you know, just you don't compete. It's almost, I always call it cooperation. Like it's not competition, it's not cooperation, but it's, we're working together, but we're also, we also know that only one of us, like in stand up, like that's how I also, you know, there's 300 comics in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but there's only 7 comedy clubs. So we're all competing for those spots, but we're not like competing against each other. We're, you know, working with each other to make each other better, but also look, you know, like trying to make ourselves, you know, available for those opportunities and to be able to take them and not just, you know, have 7 people be the best comics in the city.
And, you know, it's so important that there's enough to go around. There's always enough to go around, whether it's laughs or deals. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a limited supply of that. There's an infinite supply. It's all about showing up and being present and really delivering. Mm-hmm. On a regular basis. And I think that's where a lot of folks don't realize. They think that they've only got to do it in one opportunity, especially in podcasting. They just focus on one little area. I'm like, well, no. Share your message everywhere, because you never know who needs to see it or what platform somebody's going to be on that's different than if you're just focused on one thing. You're going to miss all these other people that aren't different platforms.
Absolutely. And it's also, you know, people just don't realize, like you can't just look for people that are looking for you. You have to also, you know, spread your message to people that may not be looking at all. And it's like all of a sudden, you know, somebody that's, you know, casually thought about real estate investing, not just the people that actually want to get into this. I mean, absolutely, you want those people, but you also want to try to appeal to the person that maybe has, you know, got like, you know, looked at seminars and things like that, but has cold feet and it's like doesn't, you know, sees like the cost prohibitive of a 3-day, you know, because it's a real, you know, like you, I'm sure in 2004, it was a sweeping change in your life to say, you know what, bye-bye 9-to-5 job or, you know, steady income. This is, we're shooting from the hip now.
Yeah, it totally was. I was a banker at JP Morgan Chase. I remember putting my notice in and starting a mortgage company from scratch and just, okay, how do we do this? How do we create this? You know, what can we learn from? And I'm a big believer that everybody's a buyer, a seller, or a funding source of mine. Mm-hmm. In my world, and I, one of the biggest numbers and facts that have been pounded into my brain is that 80% of sales in my world in real estate or any sales, it happens after the 5th contact. So you've got to continuously follow up with folks. You've got to deliver. And then not everybody says yes immediately. Sometimes it's a 6-month process where people will listen or follow you or kind of watch from afar and say, okay, is this guy or gal really this person that you present? Mm-hmm. And people will find out, okay, this guy is really who it is. Because that's what we get all, somebody books a phone call with me or wants to sign up for a class or invest with us, we get on a phone with them there. And usually I've been following you for 6 months or 6 years, and I'm finally ready to do something. I'm like, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody has the same time frame. Some people need to delay things. And that's a big, big disservice for a lot of folks out in the, I guess you say the education or the digital marketing field, is that they don't build in those follow-up systems, or they think it's got to be instant gratification and they get disappointed. And I'm like, no, you've got to give this stuff time. It's like being a Johnny Appleseed. You have to spread a lot of seeds and see what sprouts up at different times.
Yeah. That's one of the, I think one of the big, I guess, downsides of social media is exposure is big upside, but downside is everybody assumes that it's going to be a floodgate and that it's not, and there, and it's not, people always expect sweeping changes. Like you, there is no sweeping change. There is slow and gradual changes. You know, think of it as, you know, just a landslide. Basically, it's landslides already happened, but now we're just waiting for the extra pebbles to kind of move us this way.
Totally, totally true. And then you look at that, all the algorithms. I mean, that's one of the things that we're constantly talking about. Like, listen, if you're on Facebook, if you're not paying to get your message out, your audience, only maybe 5% of your followers or friends are actually seeing your stuff on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about podcasting, because it's, you know, there's 26 to 30% of the population is listening, which is great. And they listen to 85, 86% of what you're saying. You know, that's great. It's the best engagement tool out there. But if you're only on iTunes or only have a podcast and aren't sharing on YouTube, you're missing 70% of the other audience out there who's not listening to iTunes. Yeah. So it's really important to know your audience and your avatar and where they're spending their time or where they're putting their eyeballs and their earballs, as I like to say, so you can tap into them.
So as a business for 18 years, how many big is your team now behind you? That's like,
you would laugh. I keep a very lean, tight machine. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to have an office before COVID. We'd have 4 full-time employees and an intern or two and then a VA or two. And what's beautiful about what I do is we have a lot of vendors that handle a lot of the heavy lifting. So it's myself, my VP of operations, my significant other, Stephanie. She did a lot for us. And then I've got a VA that works in the Philippines. And then I have somebody who helps out part-time. But we really have automated things and leveraged virtual assistants to do a lot of stuff with it. So we keep a really lean machine. You know, like I have a full-time person that works out of her house in New Jersey who handles our portfolio, talking with the borrowers, stuff like that. And she coordinates with our attorneys and servicing companies. But it's, you know, you don't need to have this huge team and you know, huge offices like most people think you do. And that, you know, that was another lesson that one of my mentors, Bob Linnett, told me. He's like, listen, you don't need a 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 square foot office, because then it becomes just a huge overhead. And it gets, every month you've got to work so hard to cover that nut every month before you have profit. Keep it lean and mean, learn to delegate, partner with people or use assistant VAs or intern, and keep it really tight, lean and mean, especially when you have downturns. You're going to be glad you don't have this huge overhead when things change. And that's saved us several times. Biggest, we're lean and mean and being agile, mobile, and non-hostile.
Yeah. And I guess the VA in the Philippines handles, I guess, your overnight and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, she works, you know, she can work different things. She works overnight, and then if I need her for a period of time to work the same time that we do here, she adjusts her schedule to work during her nights and days here. But she works, you know, 20 to 40 hours a week, depending on what we need. If I need to add a second or third one, I can do so with a project with a company we use for that. So that's helpful, because it's a fraction of what we'd be paying somebody here without the taxes and the insurance and overhead.
Yeah, because I've talked to people that I've like worked with, like they have somebody overseas, like video production teams, like they'll have their video editor working overseas, because our night, while they're asleep, that's their day. And so they get the work right. You know, we send it over to them at 9 o'clock at night. That's their 8 a.m. And then they do the work from 8 to 5. And then if they go to bed, we get the work, you know, back. And so it's like really... It really just, you know, instead of having to wait till tomorrow morning and then, you basically maximized your time where you're not even working to actually get work done.
Well, that's the biggest thing. If you want to make, and I tell this to anybody, if you're an entrepreneur, you want to go from making 0 to 6 figures, hire an assistant. A VA can do stuff while you're sleeping to help you maximize, whether it's pulling information or doing editing. I mean, can't afford a full-time VA, then use Fiverr.com to find somebody to help you out with some things. So that's one of the most important things, is learning how to delegate. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, we are control freaks and got to do everything perfect. Well, perfection equals broke. Delivered equals riches.
Now, do you have any children, Ernie?
Not that I know of.
Okay. My friend has kids, and we're like thinking about, like, she's like 13 and she's already doing graphic design, and we're like already like, you know, she could basically end up having a profile on Fiverr like in 2 years.
Yeah.
And start building a portfolio, and actually, before she even gets out of high school, have a career in graphic design. Just by, it's like, it's amazing kind of the new avenues of, I guess, workforce you have in society has been such a mind-blowing to me. It's like, oh my God, you could just do what you really want and then sell your skills on Fiverr or, you know, any of the other websites that are similar.
It totally is. I mean, I was talking with my buddy the other day. His daughter is went to college. I was almost a junior. She already had 60 hours of stuff that she got credit for from taking online courses and AP, but she also, in her niche, did the same thing. She started creating templates and things and graphic design, and was already making money before she entered into college because she created some templates or, you know, download things that people were purchasing on a regular basis. So that's the beautiful thing about today's world, is if you are artistic, you don't have to just be a drawer or a painter. We use Canva all the time. We're in on a weekly basis, but there's things that people can use on a regular basis. You look at classes, you know, other places like lynda.com for online classes, or there's a few others out there that too that you can be selling. You know, your expertise is needed out there, and it's not all reliant on being 18 or 21 these days, you know, or being here in the United States too. I've got friends that travel nonstop, but they do all their stuff virtually and have clients all across the world.
Yeah. And I'm just applauding you. Like, I mean, you have so much going on, but yet you still find time to actually do sales and stuff like that. You're doing, you know, our podcast and our live stream on YouTube. It's your life, even though you may just be in Austin, like, it seems like it's always, you've always got something on the itinerary. You got time where you actually, you know, one-on-one Zoom call with closers and stuff like that to kind of offer your expertise.
Yeah, I've got coaching. I mean, we have coaching students that we teach, but, you know, we were really smart. Like, we just held an event 2 weeks ago for 4 days via Zoom called Note Camp. And it's a mid-year convention we've been doing now for about 6 years now. And we had 24 speakers over 4 days live. A couple hundred people joined us live online. Well, now what are we doing? Every day we're re-releasing one of those sessions.
Yeah.
For basically 5 weeks straight. So I can kind of take a lull. Yeah. It looks like I'm going live using Restream and Repurpose or Reshare it everywhere else and Buffer. So it's just a matter of, okay, we're down, but we're really, it doesn't mean we stop marketing, you know, and stop advertising what we're doing and spreading the word. We just have automated it. So makes it look, there's one time we took a 3-week vacation. Nobody knew we were out of town because they thought we were live because we mass recorded a lot of stuff and then dripped it out for 3 weeks.
It's probably the best kind of vacation. Nobody knows you're gone.
So true.
And that helps you get refreshed. And it really leads into what you're afraid of, which is, you know, letting people down. And that's such a, the preparation you go into what you do is such, it shows like that your care and your, I guess, concern and just kind of like just passion about like real estate, because you could do just the podcast, you could do just the live stream or Note Night in America, but the fact that you're constantly churning like assistance and, you know, just your knowledge and, you know, just try, you're constantly learning, and not only are you learning, you're sharing that learning with your students and others that may be potential students.
So here's how we got started with this. So I always, back in 2002, when the downturn hit and I got laid off and stuff like that, I can remember being in a distress and almost losing my house. I can really remember how stressful, and I remember saying, you know, I'm not really religious, but I do have a lot of faith. I remember, God, if you get me through this situation, I promise I will help as many people get out of the situation. And who knows, you know, I didn't expect to be in the mortgage note business at that time. And, you know, now where I'm at now, it's a total, you know, 20 years since that happened. And I'm always laughing at the fact that more people aren't sharing more. Now, there's two schools of thought on this. Now, there's a great book out there that came out that kind of had a little bit to do with this. What Would Google Do? is a great book that talks about how Google, when they built the Google platform, they opened up their coding, their API, and all this stuff to allow people to build upon the Google platform, which is not what a lot of folks have done. You compare that to where my niche of, I guess you say educators or gurus is a four-letter word we do, but like my biggest peer, he once sat down with me. We were sitting at an event, and he comes up and goes, "You, Scott, I just don't get it. Your generation is to give, give, give. My generation is you got to pay for everything." I'm like, well, you can either stick in your generation and keep expecting to pay, or you know what they're going to do. They're going to get smart and go out and find people that are delivering a bigger bang for the buck. It's with such a wealth of information. If you're hoarding your information, it's a big red flag. It's something you're not having people sign up, but when people see what we do, they're just overwhelmed. Like, man, if he gives all this away, what's his stuff, his paid stuff going to be like? And, you know, we always big believe in giving and you know, over delivering and under promising. You know what I mean? And that, you know, like you said, yeah, that's one of my biggest fears is always to let folks down. I mean, I'm not perfect. We've had ups and downs, you know, deals that go south, stuff like that. But we've always said, listen, I take accountability. Hey, shit happens. Shouldn't have happened. I'm the leader of this. Let's get this fixed. We're working to get it solved, you know, and we have a solution B or C instead of A. We're working through that. But that's the biggest thing. It's just, look, I just deliver and I deliver. My information does no good in my head by itself. I try to get it out. You know, people don't have to pay me. They can literally go to the podcast, No Night America, and learn most of what we teach. But that's a long, long, long road of episodes. You might as well, okay, take a class or two, see if I'm your education flavor, and then sign up for some, because I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm not everybody's flavor. I'm not everybody's favorite. I am what I am. I'm not going to blow smoke. If you want to blow smoke, go get you a cigar, go listen to somebody else.
Yeah. and so, but I think that also works in your favor to be that. Cause like if you're not honest, then that's where you lose that. I would say that team because they know you're honest. And so you become, you know, like, okay, well, if somebody's going to look at this and tell me the honest truth, it's this guy. And, you know, you get people that maybe wouldn't have taken your class, but because of your honesty about their situation, say, you know what, I do need help. You know, maybe you're honest, because sometimes honesty makes people have a long, hard look at themselves.
Yeah. That's so true, Brian.
Yeah, you know, because as comics, we do that too. Like people are like, you know, I think I'm ready to do. You're not. And having somebody that you respect tell you, hey, you're not ready, that doesn't mean it is a bad thing. Like it's not a bad thing to be not ready. It's disappointing, but you have to also take a look at, okay, where can I get better? And it's everybody we can all keep getting better. There's like into the real estate, you've gotten what, 700 episodes of your podcast?
Yeah, 700 episodes of the Note Closer Show, 134 of Note Night in America, and another 100 plus with our Note Camp podcast. So over 1,000 episodes, basically.
And there's still new information.
It's always changing. You gotta stay on top of the market, man.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of it, is that you know, 1,000 episodes in and you can still find something new. To not just like a 5-minute blur, but it's an hour to 2-hour conversation with other people. And it's just, and it, you find yourself just kind of getting lost in it. And it's like, you're like, wow, this is something, you know, and that's part of, you know, not letting people down is being thorough and being like honest. Like I've, as somebody that's I would say one of the larger comics in my scene, I feel, you know, an obligation to kind of help people and, you know, not coach them, but tell them it's okay to feel this way. You're doing something that is a lot of ego involved. And so you have to forgive yourself for, you know, you'll make mistakes, but you can't just sit there every opportunity and focus on that mistake. Realize you made that mistake last time, and this is an opportunity now to learn from that and do and go a different path than the same path you just took.
Yeah, it's so important to own your craft and get skilled at what you're saying. And I want to ask you a question. What's worse, when you deliver a joke and there's crickets or booze? What do you hate?
Crickets.
What's worse? Crickets, yeah?
I would rather you just tell me you don't like it than to just let me sit there and wonder if because it's like sending a text message to the person you love and being left on read. Like, yep.
I love you. No response.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, what am I? I don't understand, you know, why you're not giving me any kind of, you know, it's like, is it how I said it? Is it the way I said it? Is it the subject? In some ways, you can kind of look back on it with eyes and be like, okay, just like with, you know, a deal, you can be like, you know, what caused these people to then back out of this, you know, and you kind of look at it and like, okay, well, maybe I was put too pushy, or I didn't give them enough time to decide, or there's lots of different factors, and you just kind of, you can guesstimate, you know, where you kind of went wrong. And
totally can. And I will tell you this. One of the ways I get better as a speaker, because I'm a public speaker and I speak not only on real estate, but podcasts and other things, is I've learned a lot from comedians over my years. It's one of my favorite things to go out to is the comedy clubs and listen to comedy specials and see how comedians deliver a joke or how they present a story. Mm-hmm. And it's literally one of the most awesome things that's helped me become a better speaker in my years. Because I speak usually at least once every week on either a podcast or a meetup group or something like that, or an investment club. And I have such a huge respect for comics. So
a lot of people, I mean, it is, I would say it's very hard. It's harder than people think, but it's also easy. It also gets easier. And just like,
sure.
Just probably like real estate, like you with numbers and stuff, you're overwhelmed with costs and things that you'll have to initially absorb, but you have to learn, okay, to turn a profit, there's never going to be, it's not like the real estate shows where you're going to find everything you want for the price you want. Sometimes you're going to have to get a little out of your, or a lot in some situations, out of your comfort zone to.
Yeah. These HGTV, it should be fiction TV, because, you know, when the barista and the guy or the gal that's an aluminum can collector recycler is like, oh, our budget's $1 million, you know, I'm like, no, that's not real life.
It doesn't happen. So what is your best tool, you would say, to try to, you know, to not let people down? Like, what is your like, I guess, best method?
So the best method I look at is just being consistent. I mean, it doesn't mean we run through pod fade or a little bit, because then we do hit those, you know, spots where we're like, I don't have anything to deliver this week. But that's the thing, is Monday night is like my weekly accountability a lot, most of the times. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've been doing that forever. It's like, okay, it's my weekly way to connect with my audience and listen. I literally listen to people. When people send me a question and I see it more than once, I pay attention, like, okay, that's a question that's being asked. I need to answer that question. And I'm always asking, like, we just did this event, you know, and I sent a survey, and I'm going through these survey questions, asking people what's their biggest need, what's their biggest goals. And I use that for content and use that for episodes of my podcast or Note Nightmaker. When I see especially a recurring question, a recurring goal pop up, I'm like, okay, I really need to highlight that, focus on it. So I just listen. A lot of entrepreneurs, they think they know what their audience wants, and they keep delivering content. They get upset. There's nobody showing up. There's nobody watching. It's like, well, you're thinking, you're not listening to your audience. So you've got to constantly listen to your audience, and your audience, your fans and stuff like that. And your students will tell you what they need more of. They may not always tell you directly, but you've got to pay attention and be open to it. Because if you ask them and they tell you, and you go do something else, they're going to stop telling you and go find it online or go find your competitor or peer to deliver that.
Scott, that's amazing. Where can people find you on social media? I appreciate you taking time out to do this.
Ryan, I was honored to be on here, and I want to give a big shout out to you, man. If you're listening to this, guys and gals, do Ryan a favor. He's kicking ass and taking names. So make sure you go on over, hit that subscribe button, and leave that 5-star review for Ryan. We don't want 3 stars, 2 stars, 1 stars. We want 5 stars. Cinco, baby. Leave him a 5-star review. Because us as podcasters, that's one great way we love to listen to our audience and connect with our audience. So thank you, Ryan, for having me on here. The best and easiest way for folks to connect with me is just go to weclosenotes.com or on most of the social media channels out there, Instagram, Twitter, all those, Facebook. I'm one. That's the number one, Scott Carson. That's my handle on most things.
That's awesome. And I love how you like streamlined like everything. Like you found, like I did. I was like, Some of All Fears was taken by a lot of things, so I took Some Fear Fans for a lot of my social media.
I love it.
Find one thing, and you're like, subscribe. Mine. Like, we close notes, like, in the one Scott Carson. So, yeah, I it's really easy, because then they remember, if they don't remember one part, if they remember at least that part of it, they can find you on any social media platform.
So I'll tell you a hint I got. I was interviewing Dean Graziosi, who's a real estate guy. He works with Tony Robbins, but he's also been a real estate for years in infomercials. But Dean taught me something on a podcast. He says, if you can find anything, it's like Dean's podcast, Dean's book, Dean's schedule, and go find those. I was like, it makes it simple. You can always change those links that they report to, but if you go like, you know, Ryan's book, Ryan's comedy, Ryan's podcast, and go buy those URLs. Then it's really easy to refer people. Hey, you want to listen more? Go to ryanspodcast.com. Or if you want to get my book, go to ryansbook.com and go from there.
Thank you so much for doing this, Scott.
Thank you, Ryan, for having me. It's been an honor, man.
So that was Scott. That was a fun interview. I thank you, Scott, so much for your time and to be adaptable when the first idea fell through to actually be able to transition and move to a second platform to do this interview with me over Zoom. I appreciate it. Please check out Scott Carson at weclosenotes.com, social media, We Close Notes, as well as his podcast, The Note Closers Show, which is hundreds and hundreds of episodes about real estate. So if you're interested in real estate investing, please, I implore you to check out Scotty Carson at We Close Notes if you haven't already. He's an amazing resource as well as a great human being. And so I appreciated his conversation. It's a very, very touching fear, especially when you're in such a leadership position to hold yourself accountable and to have accountability calls and things like that to kind of keep yourself in check, as well as, you know, be an amazing leader. Like, I feel like that's something that, you know, is very inspiring, is that he is a leader and an amazing, amazing real estate investor that's been doing it for well over a decade, almost 20 years now. So check out Scott Carson again at weclosenotes.com. As for me, I just got back from Little Rock, Arkansas, and had a great weekend with Colin Chamberlain, Todd Birdwell, and Haley Jones. It was a real fun time. We had a great time at the condo. We did some sightseeing at the Big Dam Bridge Trail, so we did some walking. We saw a little bit of downtown Little Rock, as well as a little bit of historic area. It was a fun time. We had great shows. Crowds were amazing. I enjoyed my time. Hopefully I'll get some little TikToks and things, social media video clips out of this. But yes, I had a great time. I got another show Tuesday at the Plano House of Comedy. And then Thursday, I will be at Hyenas in Fort Worth for the 325 show. And then Saturday night, the 17th, I'll be doing my show, the Joke Machine, at Dallas Comedy Club with some of my special guests. So check that out as well. I thank you guys again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. If you like what you hear, leave a review and have a great week. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite H2O. Get it? H2O like water. You can also follow him on Facebook. Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at Gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, GunnarOlson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Sum of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, somefearfans, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. You know, give us some feedback. If on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, leave a review. It makes the show bigger and
It's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perio. It's RyanPerrio on all social media platforms. You can follow me there. And you can check me out at RyanPerrio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened. And everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.